Hello and welcome back to another episode of Behind the Story. I am Yeshu Upasani, the paranormal believer.
And I'm Arjun Raghunathan, the skeptic. If this is the first episode of Behind the Story that you're listening to, then this is the podcast where we talk about the true stories that inspired famous horror movies. But this season, we're delving into the terrifying creatures that rule the supernatural: vampires, werewolves, the whole lot of them.
In this episode, we're going to be talking about zombies. You know them, you don't particularly love them, but they've been the subject of every sitcom at some point. But never fear, despite there being plenty of zombie movies to talk about, I still have a personal favorite to promote, and that is the ever-famous Shaun of the Dead.
Released on April 9th, 2004, Shaun of the Dead follows losers Sean and Ed, who quickly find their city to be taken over by zombies. It's a hilarious horror comedy starring Simon Pegg, Nick Frost, and more. And it's a good watch if you're looking for something in the horror genre that's not going to send you hiding under the covers.
Today, we're going to be discussing the origins, real-life cases, and pop culture significance of these undead creatures. But first, don't forget to follow us at Behind the Story on Instagram with a period between the I and N, and on Twitter with the underscore between the I and N, and just follow this podcast wherever you're listening to it. Also, we wanted to remind you guys that every season we donate all of our funds to a charity, and this season we are donating to the National Women's Law Center to help empower women through legal action.
And now let's talk about the origins of zombies. All right, so now a little bit on the origins of these zombies. While you might think the tales of zombies were populated by creative filmmakers or novel writers, the scary stories can actually be traced back centuries. From times when people would have nightmares of their dead loved ones rising from the grave, when eyes would play tricks and fear tales ran rampant, stories about zombies have flourished. We can trace the origins of some of these stories back to the Haitian people and the Haitian Creole traditions that originated for centuries before them. According to Haitian folklore, the book Race, Oppression, and the Zombie reads that zombies are a result of a voodoo sorcerer called the Bokor. The word zombie was brought to Haiti by West African slaves, growing in meaning along with the history-rich stories told by those practicing the voodoo religion at the time. I'll quote directly from an NPR article that continues the timeline. In an essay for the New York Times last year, University of California, Irvine, Professor Amy Willens called zombies a, quote, very logical offspring of New World slavery, end quote. According to Willens, because slavery in colonial Haiti was so viciously brutal, death was the only real escape and seen as a way to return to Africa or Ian Gedi. As she writes, suicide was the slave's only way to take control over his or her own body, and yet the fear of becoming a zombie might stop them from doing so. This final rest in green, leafy, heavenly Africa with no sugarcane to cut and no master to appease or serve is unavailable to the zombie. To become a zombie was the slave's worst nightmare. To be dead and still a slave, an eternal field hand, end quote. The earliest references to zombies in the United States were closely associated with slavery and connected connected the word to African traditions. The word zombie, which for years was spelled without the E at the end, first appeared in print in an American newspaper in a reprinted short story called The Unknown Paper in 1838.
It's nice to know that no matter what you're talking about, whether that be politics, the supernatural, your daily drive to Target, colonization has had a beautiful way of impacting every aspect of it. So,
Beautiful is one way to put it.
right. Beautiful in the terms of how we say, the great king who killed a ton of people, as in, wow, that's a lot of something. But nevertheless, we do have two real life cases to get to here. But first, I find it important that we define the word zombie. Now, if you go back and listen to our Dracula episode, one of the things Arvin and I talked about was how there is no general consensus about what makes a vampire. And essentially, that's kind of the case with zombies. Yes, there is the simple terms of people who were dead that have come back and they are now alive. But, the meaning of the word has changed over time. We now have zombies that are beings that have come back from the dead and they have some kind of compulsion to do something. Most of the time, we see it be murder or biting people to convert them or eating people's faces. And then we also have this whole idea that zombies walk around and they're moaning and they're groaning and they're you know, they can't even speak well. So the definition of zombie has changed. But for these two cases, I'm talking about the very simple, very classic thing of they were dead, but now they're alive again. So I only have two, and I'll come back to that two thing later. But the first one, and the earliest case of zombies, comes from Haiti, which is no surprise considering the creatures' origin. So we have Felicia Felix Mentor, who died in 1907 in Haiti. But in 1936, 29 years later, Mentor was seen walking through the streets of her town, talking about herself in the third person and laughing. Now, modern day science has proved Mentor to be suffering from mental illnesses like severe schizophrenia instead of, you know, actually being a zombie. For a long time, she was used as proof for the existence of zombies. And now for the second one. I know Arvind tends to be the science guy, while I lean more towards the Mary Shelley alchemy Frankenstein world, but this next quote-unquote case is nothing but straight science. So ha, I win. In 2005, at the University of Pittsburgh, scientists were able, and this is crazy, to bring dogs back to life. At the Safar Center for Resuscitation Research, doctors put several dogs to what is called clinical death when their heart rate totally stops and their body temperature plummets. In order to do this, scientists replaced the blood in these dogs' bodies with a saline solution. When the dogs were pronounced dead, they drained out the solution and put back in the original blood. While some of the dogs suffered mental and physical damage, most didn't, and came back to the same state they were in while alive. Now, this research was all done in an effort to hopefully save the lives of people who very quickly and suddenly may go into, like, cardiac arrest, or they get into a really bad accident, and it's something that's just, like, it'll be a quote-unquote, like, quick fix. Now, I know what you guys are thinking. Yashvi, two cases? Well, the truth of the matter is, most of the cases involving the dead coming back can be disproved or are science-based, as we've seen in the last two. So in the interest of not just, like, repeating myself over and over, I've kept it to these scenarios. But if we're talking about, like, the compulsion face-eating aspect of zombies, then just one Google search will leave you with more information than you asked, you know, because technically you could categorize most cannibal-related attacks to zombies in some way, which is both, I guess, kind of cool, but mostly unsettling. And that's not really what we're talking about in this episode. We're kind of sticking with that whole theme of, like, they were dead and now they're not. So I'm just going to leave that here and allow Arvind to do what he does best, which is take the fun out of everything and be a skeptic.
See, it's not taking the fun out of it when I'm just right, you know?
Okay. Bold words.
So on these cases, I feel like you've actually done my job a little bit for me throughout this entire thing. Like you said with Felicia Felix Mentor, how she's proved to have suffered from mental illnesses like severe schizophrenia. So although she might have been used as proof of zombies a long time ago, we can tell now that she wasn't a zombie. And actually, the second one I found really cool, because like you said, that is just straight science. But I think that's again, kind of what we talked about, how, like, what exactly is a zombie? I feel like you kind of need the whole, like, the whole reanimated concept, maybe not the longing for brains, but at least the lack of the same intelligence as you had when you were quote-unquote alive. I feel like those two cases kind of proved themselves wrong a little bit, but if you guys aren't convinced, I can give you 10 reasons right now, actually 11 reasons right now, as to why zombies don't exist. First off, easiest one, zombies don't exist. There's nothing out there to eat my brains. Otherwise, like, come on. We'd all already be inside with our pots in our hands using pea shooters to protect ourselves. Like, we would have gone full Plants vs. Zombies by now if they were running rampant. We would have had a complete apocalypse at this point. Even if we assume that the supernatural was real and some humans could really come back to life as zombies, it is physically impossible for zombies to exist in our modern world. HowStuffWorks.com gives a quick 10 of these reasons, and I'll go through them now. First, humidity is hell. Earth's weather would take a toll on zombies through high heat and humidity spreading the deterioration of their rotting flesh. And winter would cause these zombies' bones to become more brittle and fragile than they already are. Not to mention deterioration caused by ultraviolet sun rays, hurricane-force winds, sheets of rain and hail, mountains of snow. I could keep going on. And they're kinetic catastrophes. We're all mechanical animals of some sort, and this is because of the links between our muscles, our tendons, our skeletons, and much more. And when part of that system goes awry, we don't move much, if at all. So if modern-day zombies were able to completely move, walk around, shuffle while their flesh and bones were like dangling and drooping, sometimes just completely missing, it wouldn't make sense at all. And also, the human central nervous system controls all of our muscular activity by using electrical signals from the brain to the muscle cells. And of course, zombies suffer from massive head wounds a lot of the time, which would render any brain completely non-functional, meaning the idea of forward motion is like just completely out of the question. There are also, with our third one is possible immunity. With their ample fleshiness, zombies are a perfect breeding ground for an untold number of bacteria, fungi, and viruses that would just completely devour them from the inside out. Fourth, metabolic meltdowns. In theory, zombies consume brain because they require some sustenance to function, but if they aren't, they aren't alive and lack metabolic capabilities of any kind. Zombies have no metabolism, so even if they could magically summon the energy to chomp on some tasty brains, their stomachs, if they even have them, couldn't provide a chemical pathway for nutrients to actually be converted into more energy. Dog-eat-dog-eat zombie, hyena, wolves, bears, coyotes, foxes, and packs of vicious feral dogs. They will all be just as much predators as zombies if the apocalypse ever strikes out. And these animals would see the reanimated dead and just rip them apart. Like, it's just walking bags of meat. They, like, the dogs, the wolves, they'd all go completely crazy on them. Sensory underload. Vision, hearing, touch, taste, and smell are all key to our survival. Because zombies are perpetually disintegrating, it's difficult to understand how they'd perform any of the vital actions necessary to hunt for brains. As they begin to rot, the soft tissue of their eyes would be among the first organs to fall apart, leaving zombies grasping blindly for anyone unlucky enough to wander into their blackened hands. Their eardrums would warp and tear and fall in tatters, as would the rest of their auditory system. Deaf and blind, zombies would then fall back on their sense of smell, which would likely be overwhelmed by the stench of their own meat decomposing. This means zombies would feel the need to feel their way through the world. In large numbers, a few would probably get a couple unlucky victims from time to time, but most fully functional humans would be able to avoid these completely blind and deaf and unable to smell monsters. And it's not exactly bird flu. There's an array of issues with biting people to make more zombies, starting with the fact that it's really inefficient. First, zombies just somehow grab a person long enough to inflict the bite. It's tough. This is a tough position for a creature that is often missing an arm or a leg. And second, the act of biting consumes enormous amounts of time or energy, things that we've already said aren't physically possible. And of course, biting requires close physical contact with the victim, assuming the victim can't just like squirm away, punch the zombie and run, etc. Time heals all wounds, but not zombies. Whereas humans have tissues that can regenerate and heal themselves, zombies don't. Their wounds, no matter how mild or severe, are permanent. Imagine a paper cut that not only doesn't heal, but becomes wider and deeper by the day. As the flesh continues to divide, the bone is revealed, and eventually the last drooping flaps of flesh just completely fall to the ground. A small scrape would blister into peels of skin that sag and slide right off of a zombie's body. Skin charged by burns would curdle into goopy, grimy mess. And zombies probably can't poop. Brains that you will just hit a dead end when the esophagus hits the stomach. As a zombie dines on more and more brains, the undigested glop of chewy stuff would just ferment, bubbling gases and eventually bursting through the walls of the zombie's stomach. Disgusting. Lastly, we have no dentures for the undead. As zombies' gums rot and the enamel cracks and fades, the bony protrusions of their teeth will become pitted and stained and then fall right out of their skulls, meaning biting you is a hopelessly futile endeavor. So we can see that zombies are physically impossible to exist in our world, and of course we know that that zombies wouldn't be out there, otherwise we'd already be in some sort of apocalypse and we'd all either be zombies or hidden away in some bunker.
Thank you, Arvin, for that incredibly speedy. So if you guys want to go back and listen to that a couple times, you totally can. Not only speedy, incredibly thorough and incredibly gross. So and new things every season, guys. I do, though, want to switch gears a little bit. And by a little bit, I mean a lot. And start talking about the pop culture aspects of zombies. I will go, though, give a big shout out to Arvind on this one, who did actually do all of the research for the pop culture segment. Because, you know, he was just on the grind, and I was not. So, a big round of applause for Arvind. Great job. Okay, that's enough now. The pop culture aspects. As I've said before, every sitcom I think ever has had a zombie episode, and that extends from shows like friends at some point, they probably reference the zombie. And to the one I'm thinking about the most is not even a sitcom, and it's not even directly relating to zombies, but it's been stuck in my head for this entire research that we've done, and I have to say it, is that one South Park episode, and I did the Living Homeless, where they treat homelessness as if it was like the zombie in like quote unquote disease or whatever. Anyways, my point is, zombies have made their way everywhere. But it's, you know, origins of pop culture date back quite a bit. So in an essay about the evolution of the zombie in American pop culture, Ann Cordes notes that the fictional story of Merlioz's young slave seemed to have struck a chord with the American public, and different versions of the story were published many times in local newspapers throughout the 1800s. Cordes notes that by the mid-1800s, a zombie had for many, quote, come to be associated with a creature of African origin that willingly performed services for whites, end quote. Once again, racism finds its way everywhere, guys. Mm-hmm. Moving on. By 1872, the linguistic scholar Maximilian Shealy de Vere, what a name, would define a zombie as, quote, a phantom or a ghost not infrequently heard in the southern states in nurseries and among the servants, end quote. But the mainstreaming of the word would begin in 1929 when the traveler writer William Seabrook released his book on the released his book on Haiti and voodoo, titled The Magic Island, in which Seabrook writes about seeing voodoo cults in Haiti and the concept of the zombie to many readers. Several film scholars believe the book was the basis of the classic 1932 horror film White Zombie. The film White Zombie was, as the title suggests, about white rather than an African zombie. In the film, a young couple named Madeline and Neil are talked into getting married on a Haitian plantation by the owner, who is secretly plotting to seduce the bride. To that end, he teams up with a local Creole mill owner, played by Bela Lugosi, great names, guys, who gives him a zombie potion to use on Madeline. Well, as we continue to talk about this movie, I hope we keep in mind that this was the 1930s, which does not excuse anything, but let's just remember that. We are in no way recommending this movie. Other zombie films would follow later, though, but they'd rarely take place in Haiti or incorporate the word's origins the way that the white zombie did. An example is the 1943 horror movie I Walked with a Zombie, in which a Canadian nurse travels to the fictional Caribbean island of St. Sebastian to care for the wife of a plantation owner. On arrival, she finds her charge in a zombie-like state and wonders if voodoo will cure her. 1968's Night of the Living Dead is widely considered a landmark film in the genre. Marking the 45th anniversary of the release of the film, Code Switch's Matt Thompson wrote that the film, quote, set the expectation that zombie movies would be a vehicle for stinging social commentary, end quote, and that it did so because director George Romero cast a black actor, Duane Jones, as the protagonist. Audiences at the time were set to draw a connection between the action on the screen and the fight for civil rights. Through the years, researchers and anthropologists have occasionally tried to research the Haitian voodoo belief in zombies. In 1937, the author Zora Neale Hurston traveled to Haiti to research Haitian customs for her book, Tell My Horse. In a 1943 interview, Hurston was asked to define exactly what a zombie was. Her reply, quote, a zombie is supposed to be the living dead, people who die and are resurrected. Their souls. They can take orders and they're supposed to never be tired and to do what the master says, end quote. One of the most famous studies of Haitian zombies was ethnobotanist Wade Davis's 1985 book, The Serpent and the Rainbow, a Harvard scientist's astonishing journey into the secret societies of Haitian voodoo, zombies, and magic. The highly controversial book sought to discover how zombies were created. Wade studied the case of Clervius Narcisse, a man believed to have been turned into an actual zombie through a combination of drugs, including pufferfish venom and toad venom, in order to mimic death, and then given the hallucinogenic drug tetrodotoxin to keep him in a zombie-like state. As you can see, things are hard to say today, guys. Davis's research created a huge stir upon publication, with other researchers claiming his methodology was unscientific and that they couldn't find evidence of the hallucinogenics upon testing his samples. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is among the organizations that have sought to capitalize on the American appetite for all things zombie. In 2012, the CDC raised some eyebrows when it unveiled a page on its website devoted to zombie preparedness, much like if you are a longtime fan of this podcast, the Zombie Research Society that Arvind and I are so very obsessed with. Anyways, back to the CDC. On the page, the CDC's director of the Office of Public Health Preparedness and Response, Dr. Ali Khan, notes, quote, if you are generally well-equipped to deal with the zombie apocalypse, you will be prepared for a hurricane, pandemic, earthquake, or terrorist attack. The site was so unpopular that it crashed when it was launched. I think there is something to say, though, about needing to tell specifically the American people that zombies are coming to get them ready to deal with natural disasters. Like, I think if you were to tell somebody that, like, hey, maybe you should prepare your house for a hurricane, I think they're less likely to do it than if you were to tell somebody, hey, zombies are here, maybe you should get your house ready.
Yeah, 100%.
I think there is something about the idea of being prepared for a zombie attack that, like, people are less quick to dismiss it in a very odd way. Like, I think it's something that's absolutely so insane and wouldn't happen that, like, maybe I will also bring up, you know, build a little bunker. Like, you never know.
I get. Okay. You know.
Well, the thing is, though, right? The apocalypse is going to come no matter what. The issue is nobody knows what it's going to be, right? Like, how do I say this without offending anybody? I would say some people would think that it would be, you know, the climate apocalypse. I think that's a good one to believe in and be scared right. about. I think then you can get to, so climate, I'm also including like a natural disaster apocalypse. Then I would think the next tier of believability would be like the robot apocalypse, where like, okay. you know, all our new technology starts taking us over. And then maybe bottom of the barrel, I would say zombie apocalypse.
Okay, I see that. Yeah, that's very valid. But it's still on, it's still on the table.
Right. I'm right. We're not dismissing it, but we're definitely not wholeheartedly, you know, super prepping for it.
Yeah. It's a worst case, like, very low probability scenario.
Right. I do have one question for you, though, Arvind.
Okay.
And I, you know, don't just do your classic thing where you answer right away and you don't really think about it. Okay. Really okay. think about this one. You versus a zombie. But I'm okay. talking that this zombie was like dead, resurrected, has this big compulsion to eat your brain, has all limbs on them,
Ooh.
But is like moaning and groaning and moving slow. Who's winning?
Okay. There's a lot of factors into this.
Right.
One, how big is the zombie?
About 5'10".
Okay. Where am I?
You are about to... you are about to go and buy some really cool stationery from an indie like letter shop because you've gotten really into stationery recently.
So not many weapons, instead indie letter shop.
Yeah. You're like, no, like, but like you're still outside of the shop. Like you haven't
entered. Okay.
But you're like, you're close enough that like you could enter it.
Okay. And you said the zombie's slow, right? So let's stop me from just like running and just getting out.
Well, if you run, then it can't, like, it's not gonna catch up with you. But, like, so your thing would just be to run away?
I'd probably just run, grab, like, a bat or a club or something, and just come back.
Okay, what if it has, like, regular speed?
Okay, so, like, okay, even regular speed, if I was running, I could probably, okay, assuming it's faster than me, assuming I can't outrun it.
Right.
Then, in that case, I think I could do it.
You think you could beat the zombie?
I think I could, because this is what I do, okay? This is my game plan, all right? First step, I'd poke its eyes out, okay? They're already going to be, like, rotten, decomposing. It'll be easy, okay? Like, one finger each eye, gone. We already know they can't smell anything. You can't see. Maybe you can hear, but whatever. We're outside. There's going to be a lot of noises. Right? Okay, so now he can't find me. Next step, I'm not going to rip his rotting flesh off with my bare hands. I'm going to go find, like, a tree branch or something to just clobber him with. So while he's just, like, walking around confused and unable to see, I will find a tree branch and just, like, whack his head off.
Mm.
I think I can take it.
Okay. Okay.
Now, same question for you. Do you think you could?
Mm. Well, okay. In this situation where it's, like, as fast as me and, like, there's all these things, I think I could take one zombie.
Yeah.
I think, like, one-on-one, I could take it in a way where, like, I think I could, like, rip its arm off, you know?
Okay, yeah.
And then, like, attack it with its own arm.
God damn.
But, like, I think, like, the second there's, like, another zombie and now it's, like, a 2-against-1 situation, I'm less cocky. Like, I don't know if I can do it anymore. Because it's, like, now there's, like, strength in numbers, you know?
Yeah, yeah, and, I get it.
And it's, like, and then there's, like, a whole situation. And then it's, like, you know, more of them will keep coming. And at that, I think it's, like, that question. This is the comparison I'm making, guys. It's, like, that question, how many toddlers could it take to beat you up? It's, like, the same type of situation. Except, like, I think it would take far less zombies to beat me up than toddlers. Right. I'm pretty cocky with, like, how many toddlers I think I could take before they would demolish me. But, like most zombies tend to move in, like, herds, you know? So it's, like, but then again, those tend to be the slow-moving ones. I think the most terrifying thing is, like, a fast-moving zombie.
Yeah, 100%.
Because, like, if they're slow, like, I can run. I'm not even that fast of a runner, guys, and I'm confident that I could run away. Like, But there's, like, just something to be said about, like, if it has normal human speed, then I'm like, oh, then this is, like, oof, this is gross.
Yeah. I get what you mean. There's, I think in Norse mythology, there's a type of, they're not exactly zombies, but they're close enough. And I think they have basically super speed and they move completely silently. Mm. Give me a gun, every weapon that you could name, I'm still not taking that out.
Right. I think every creature in general that can move silently is automatically like a wow, this is the end, guys. This is not great. I do have some things though to point out from our absolute favorite website/society of all time, the Zombie Research Society, who has an entire tab dedicated to zombie survival in every possible way. So I'm talking, they're talking about food, water, shelter, communication, the government response. You know, they're getting into all this. They can teach you how to build a rocket stove. They can teach you what to do in this, like, sudden outbreak. But let's focus on the one article they published about zombie-proofing your apartment. You know, I think this could be good for everybody. But what the first thing they want you to do is know your zombie, because Arvin, there are, this is our bad for not knowing, three types of zombies. There's your basic walkers, who, you know, are slow and they're steady, and, you know, these are the ones that you and me can take. We're gonna crush these. But then there's your runners, who are your fast zombies. According to this website, you will not outrun them. So that's why you guys stay in your apartment. Then there's the stalkers. So these are the biggest threats to the people who live in the apartment. As this is a quote, as quadrupeds, they can scale buildings, which means most apartments will become giant zombie vending machines. End quote. So it's really high. But just so we're all prepared, okay, guys, it's all about, the first thing we're going to talk about is this door, okay? So your door should be either an MDF door, a solid wood door, or the best option, a steel door, okay? And then we got to talk about some locks, you know? Your best lock option, a bar lock, because that's what everybody has at all times on them. Make sure all your windows have tempered glass. That way zombies just can't break through them. Make sure then they have iron bars on them, and then make sure you do blackout curtains. So if everybody could just make a Home Depot list right now, I think we could all work through this really well.
I'm ready.
Right. And you also have to ensure that you have enough food in your apartment, okay? So you got to break it down by the average calories that you would eat. So with the risk of losing weight, as a man, you can eat 1,500 calories, okay? If
Okay.
you don't, if you want to maintain your current weight, if you have the money to spend, that's 2,000 to 3,000 calories. For women to lose weight, it's 1,200. To keep your average weight, it's 1,600 to 2,400. Okay. But that's not what's important. What's important is the actual food. Okay. We're talking peanut butter, but no jelly. So just no PB&Js, just PB. Okay. We got whole grain crackers because they're high in fiber. We have some dried fruit. We have canned soups and chilies and vegetables, and we have the ever most important multivitamins, okay? Because we're trying to survive here, people, okay? They also recommend having a sledgehammer or an axe on standby, which is great. And the best part is they've told us exactly the best places to hit a zombie. So
Oh.
the head, 100% effective.
Okay.
Torso, 0% effective.
Oh.
Yes, surprising.
Very interesting.
Arms, 40% effective, and your legs are 75% effective.
Interesting.
Right. So I hope we've all learned something about how to fortify our apartments in fear of a zombie attack. But maybe we got to get that bunker started.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna go to Home Depot right now, get some iron bars, some blackout curtains, everything.
That's like the kind of like Home Depot cart that like if I was a cashier, I would call the cops for.
Yeah. Oh.
I've always wondered that. This is off topic, but what is this podcast if not off topic? I've always wondered, in like movies or something, like they just go to the grocery store and buy like rope and duct tape. And like,
Yeah.
is the cashier just not like, what?
They just
Huh?
don't get paid enough to actually care.
True, true. That's a great point. I mean it's truly something. I'm looking at the top 10 safest countries right now, and the fact that the US is number three
No
seems
way.
so incorrect.
Yeah, there's no way.
They're saying it from like a landmass perspective.
But we have so many people.
True. Australia is the number one.
Okay, that I kind of get. I feel that's valid.
Australia, then Canada, then the US, then Russia, then,
Okay.
yeah, Russia I get.
Russia should be higher, though.
Oh my God, you literally, this is what they said. This is a quote, quote, "If the Nazis couldn't take Leningrad, there's no reason to think Nazi zombies will."
Can we put that in the episode?
We can. This could be a part of the episode. And then number five is Kazakhstan. Six is Bolivia. Seven's Norway. Eight's
Okay.
Finland. Nine is Argentina. And 10 is Sweden.
Huh.
Right? Oh, there, guys, there's a forum. There's comments. People are commenting. Somebody said China is the safest country because even the zombies know that it's nearly impossible to defeat Winnie the Pooh. What does that have to do with China?
God knows. It's literally the second most populated country.
Literally.
Everyone's dead. I think no, wait, I feel like the safest would be like Indonesia.
Well, this person said I think the islands will more likely
Yeah.
survive because there are about 50 planes a day.
No zombies
So, like,
hopping on a boat and like.
right. Also, I'm assuming zombies can't swim.
Yeah, that makes sense because I mean they're just bags of rotting flesh.
True. So it's a Chile exclamation point. Earthquakes are more frequent than anywhere else.
How does
Oh no.
that have to do with the zombies?
If you can't handle them, the avalanche will.
Oh, God.
We hope you enjoyed this very thorough episode of Behind the Story. Don't forget to follow our podcast at Behind the Story on Instagram with a period between the I and N, and on Twitter with an underscore between the I and N.
Be sure to come back in 2 weeks to learn about one really big furry, because as we all know,
there's always more to uncover behind the story.
See you next time.